Hello and welcome to the second in a series of three podcasts looking at NHS continuing care. Joining me today is Senior Solicitor Nicholas Endine from our community care team. Hello, Nick.
Hi.
If you've not listened to the first podcast, then please find it on our website. The first podcast acts as an introduction to NHS continuing care, what it is, and the general rules of eligibility. This podcast follows on from this and will be focusing on the assessment process and what you can expect to be discussed during this process. Our third and final podcast in this series will be looking at what can be done if you do not agree with a decision that's been made and how to challenge this through the appeals process. All the podcasts are designed to give listeners a general overview of this complex and often emotional process. Every case is different, of course, and individual circumstances will require specific advice, and we would urge anyone listening to contact the community care team if you have a question for a no-obligation discussion. During the last podcast, Nick, you explained that there were two stages of the assessment process, but before we look at these any closer, let's start right from the beginning and find out how you can apply for a CHC assessment.
That's right. If you want to apply for a CHC assessment, if you are living in your own home, then you will need to speak with a district nurse, a social worker, or your GP to get the ball rolling. If you are in a care home, then speak with the nurses there or the support staff from the home. They then need to ask for a checklist assessment from the clinical commissioning group, and that will be carried out. You can't do it yourself, but the needs will be looked at by a nurse or a doctor or other health and social care professional.
So a checklist assessment then acts as a screening tool for applications?
That's right, yeah. The checklist tool is designed to identify those individuals who need a full assessment. So as you said, it acts very much like a screening tool. It's a very low threshold to pass the checklist stage. If you don't pass the checklist stage, in theory it can be challenged, but you really have to question whether it's worth doing. If you're not passing the checklist stage, then arguably you're not going to be able to successfully pass the second stage.
And what happens if you do pass the checklist assessment?
So you have a referral for a full assessment. In order to get that, you need particular gradings in the checklist assessment. They look at all care domains and then it's graded accordingly. So if you score 2 A's, 1 A and 4 B's or 5 B's in that checklist assessment, you will then have a full referral, and that is a full assessment. It's significantly more comprehensive than the checklist assessments, and you have the input from health and social care to carry out what's called a multidisciplinary team meeting or an MDT. And as part of that process, they complete what's called the decision support tool, or DST for short.
Thanks, Nick. Just out of curiosity, you mentioned A's and B's. How big is the spectrum for that?
Oh, yeah, so it's you either score A, B or C.
Thanks. And the MDT, the multidisciplinary team that you attend, who else is expected to attend this?
So the idea of an MDT is that all physical, mental and social health needs are taken into account. So to properly capture that, you would have a representative, a nurse representative from the clinical commissioning group. You're supposed to have a social worker to provide input on social needs, because even if you're shown to have a health need, a primary health need, there still will be some elements of social care. So you're supposed to have this appropriate mix of health and social care, and other professionals are invited to contribute, including family members and other representatives, to really ensure that everything is captured in that decision support tool. The requirement under the national framework is that there is at least two professionals from two different disciplines, and ideally that should be one from health, one from social, but so that's not always possible depending on resources from public organisations. And as I said, the individual is expected to participate if they can. Of course, that's going to be patient dependent, but if there's an attorney or other family member or representative, they can ensure that those needs are captured successfully with a decision support tool.
Thank you. And will it be at the MDT where the care domains you mentioned last time are examined in more detail?
That's right, yeah. So they look at that mixture of health and social care needs, and the way it's been devised in the national framework and the guidance is that there are 12 care domains to look at. Each domain is then subdivided up into different weightings. So the idea of the MDT is to assess someone's need under a particular domain and then apply a particular weighting. And the actual breakdown of weightings depends on the domain. So in some of the domains, there's priority need. In some, there are severe. But for all of them, there is either a high weighting, a moderate, or low, or no needs weighting, with the DST capturing each of those domains.
Thank you. And what are these domains that will be discussed?
Yeah, so we've teased a bit about the 12 care domains, so it'd be useful to go through them. So the first one is breathing, where the group will discuss someone's particular breathing needs. Do they need any assistance with that, such as a nebulizer, inhaler, that type of thing? The second is nutrition, so how well can that person feed? Are they peg fed, so artificially fed? Do they have any difficulty swallowing? Do they suffer from dysphagia, things like that? Continence looks at whether someone is able to managing their own toileting needs. Skin also covers kind of skin integrity, so that's quite common with people who are no longer mobile. Their skin needs require them being turned on a regular basis. You're also looking at breakages of the skin and wound management. The fifth one is mobility, so we're looking at someone's ability to mobilise. Can they do it independently? Do they need assistance from carers? The use of a hoist, things to that effect. Communication looks at their ability to communicate needs and to speak to carers and family members about anything really. It's that ability to tell people what's wrong or tell people what they want, decision making, so forth. It doesn't have to be verbal, it can be non-verbal, and steps can be taken to help mitigate that. Psychological and emotional needs, as the name suggests, looks at the impact that perhaps this particular situation has on someone. Are they distressed, anxious, depressed, suffer from hallucinations? Cognition looks at that person's mental capacity, their ability to make decisions or understand the risks associated with a particular decision, and how much help they need, basically, in day-to-day decision making. Behaviour looks at, it assesses challenging behaviour. So sadly, with dementia, for example, people can become quite violent and aggressive and outbursts and things like that. So that's what they're looking at there, and how difficult it is for those persons' needs to be managed when factoring in behaviour. Drug therapies and medication is very much a clinical assessment, where they're looking at how much support someone may need for their medication prescription. Is there any compliance issues in place and so forth? Also, states of consciousness looks at someone's ability, so perhaps they suffer from seizures or something like that. So do they suffer from periods where they are not conscious on a regular basis, and how those needs can be met? And then the final domain is simply called other, and is used to capture anything else that doesn't fall within those 11 domains. Quite unusual to come across something in other, but it can and does happen.
Thank you. And what weightings would a person need to be eligible for NHS continuing healthcare?
So in situations like this, you turn to the national framework. A clear recommendation of eligibility for CHC funding would be expected where there is a level of priority need in any of the four care domains that carry that priority weighting, or if someone is assessed as having two levels of severe or severe levels of need in any of the domains that carry that particular weighting. That's quite clear in the framework that they would expect if someone were to score those domains, they should be eligible for funding. However, the framework goes on to say that a primary health need can also exist in other circumstances. If someone records having one severe with then a mixture of other needs, high, moderate, low, or if someone just scores a high and a moderate needs across the board, that still may indicate a primary health need depending on how those needs are then considered collectively. And that's when you're looking at what's called the four key indicators. So that's nature, intensity, complexity, and unpredictability of need. Collectively, do those needs amount to a primary health need? So is there an intensity towards that person's needs that means that social care cannot provide services? Is there any complexity to it, or is there an unpredictability to it? That's what you're looking at.
Okay, so it's these four indicators then that determine eligibility. Presumably, the higher the levels of need in each domain, the more intense, complex, or unpredictable someone's needs will be.
Yeah, that's correct. There's a clear correlation between the level of needs and the key indicators, but it's not a determining factor. So, for example, if someone has a high level of need across the board, then that in itself is very good evidence that they have a primary health need, but that's not always the case. Some patients may actually only have a severe level of need in perhaps one domain like mobility, but because in order to manage those needs are so intense, they would still potentially have that primary health need. So it's very much a case-by-case basis, but generally the higher needs that you score in the first part of the decision support tool, that would indicate that there's more time needed and dedicated to meet the overall person's needs. But as I said, it can just be limited to one domain if depending on the severity of it. The framework's quite useful as well, because it gives guidance for professionals and the clinical commissioning group, and as well as the nurse assessors when determining their recommendation. So questions include: what specific knowledge or training is required to anticipate or address that person's needs? What would happen if those needs were not met in a timely way? How often is intervention needed on a daily basis, and how long does it take for carers to actually meet that person's needs? How difficult is it to manage overall? Does any of the needs interact with one another? And that's usually quite a common factor, especially if they have a severe cognitive impairment. You'll find that there are significant overlaps between cognition and the other domains. They'll also be looking at whether needs change. You know, is there a kind of fluctuating condition? Is the condition unstable? They're the type of questions the key indicators look at, and using the evidence from the 12 care domains.
Thank you very much for your valuable input, Nick. There's an awful amount of information to digest, and it's clear that the assessment process itself is quite complex. No wonder some families seek assistance from people specialising in this area. Join us in the final podcast, where we'll be looking at the appeals if the MDT make a decision that you are not happy with. If you think that a loved one may be eligible for NHS continuing care, then please contact Nick or anyone in the community care team via the website or using the contact details on screen. The community care team will guide you on the prospects of making a successful claim and offer a free initial assessment at any stage of the process. I would like to thank Nick for joining us today, and hope you can join us for the next podcast.